I've been playing outdoors since I was a kid, standing by the front door at around 2 years old, hollering, "Side, side," trying to get my mom to let me go play outside. Now, after 30-plus years working in the outdoor business, I'm dropping insider conversations every week with brand leaders, guides, marketers, CEOs, and others that make the outdoor business a trillion-dollar juggernaut that drives product innovation, revenue, and public policy for everything outdoors. I'm Rick Sayes. Welcome to the Outdoor Biz Podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And this is episode 391 of the Colombia Calling podcast. Thank you again to all of those who signed up for the $1 tier. That's $1 per month for the exclusive newscast reported by journalist Emily Hart, arriving into your WhatsApp accounts as an audio file every Monday. So that's very cool indeed. The cutoff is today, Tuesday the 31st of August. So if you're listening to this and you've not done so, well, do so today if you're listening on Tuesday, but after Tuesday, from the 1st of September, this will go up from $1 to $2, but not a huge increase, I think you'll agree. So anyhow, please support Emily. Please support the indie media, indie journalists, and so on, freelance journalists here. This week's very special guests are no less than director Oscar Molina and producer Brenda Steinecke, and they will be talking about the new documentary they have hitting the cinemas. Well, it's a selected release in Cine Colombia here in Colombia of their documentary. It's called La Casa de Mama Icha. It's a documentary that deals with the issues of belonging, identity, of course, and where you most feel the memory and where you most feel, I guess, at home. Mama Icha is she's a grandmother, and she spent 33 years in Philadelphia in the United States, and she returns to Mompox. Of course, this means something to me and all of you out there, as Mompox is my adopted hometown at the moment. And Mama Icha is coming home after 33 years, and it's basically, that's it, isn't it? She's in her 90s, and it's time to come home. And so this documentary explores that. And so there's so many different themes in this: migration as well, economics, society, and so on. So from the 2nd of September, this documentary will be out in selected Cine Colombia cinemas around the country. And for those of you in the United States, check out PBS, and on PBS on the 18th of October, the documentary will be shown there as well. But you can find that on the PBS website. Just put in Mama Icha and it will pop up. So that's very exciting for us here. Thank you again to Manuel Oberlader and Emily Hart, of course, for last week's episode discussing their exhibition in Medellin. So that's the Contramiradas, looking at Medellin's peripheries, appreciating different districts of Medellin that perhaps aren't as publicized, aren't as overwhelmed by tourism, such as the Comuna 13, the 13th barrio or 13th commune in Medellin, which of course is a tourist destination these days, and justified as well with the escalators and of course the graffiti and the hip hop music. But there is so much more to the city. Right now, we'll go over to Emily Hart with the news, and then we'll be back with director Oscar Molina and indeed producer Brenda Steinecke, and they are in Santa Elena, so outside of Medellin in Antioquia, and they'll be talking about this great new documentary that is out on the 2nd of September. So by the time you're listening to this, some of you, it will already be out. Buy your tickets in Cine Colombia, mark your diaries for the 18th of October, and ensure that this documentary gets a wide audience. Thank you again for listening, Bye-bye.
I'm Emily Hart, and these are your top stories from Colombia for the week of August 30th, 2021. Last week's call for a general amnesty for crimes committed during the civil war is already progressing, appearing as a draft legal project to be presented by the ruling party, the Centro Democrático. The proposal made by former President Álvaro Uribe would be a significant form to the peace process. It does not propose pardons as such or a clean slate, but proposes that those who have been convicted should be eligible for election or appointment as public officials, with the exception of those convicted for crimes against humanity. The bill also seeks benefits for convicted members of the armed forces, giving parole and political rights after 5 years of sentences served in prison. In addition, it proposes a special structure within the peace tribunal, the JEP, for investigation of soldiers. Former President Uribe himself remains under legal investigation for witness tampering in a case relating to the role of his brother and himself in the creation of paramilitary groups. Meanwhile, the JEP tribunal announced it will open new investigations on displacement, sexual violence, disappearances and massacres during the civil conflict with two new cases. One will deal with FARC crimes, the other will investigate relations between paramilitaries and the state. These new cases show that the JEP is beginning to respond to demands, especially from civil society, to broaden its spectrum of investigation. Last week saw a day of renewed protest in Colombia, with peaceful though heavily policed marches and demonstrations countrywide, aimed at maintaining pressure on the agreements made with government during the months of mobilization earlier this year, and continuing to reject the systematic violence and inequality in the country. Student leader Esteban Mosquera was murdered last Monday in Popayán, Cauca, further driving protests. There have now been 108 murders of social leaders this year. Meanwhile, accountability for the widespread state violence against protesters during the national strike, known as the Paro, is in its early stages. The strikes were initially sparked by a tax reform bill in April and successfully sank the proposals. A new version of that reform bill is now progressing through Congress and is seen by many as a product of successful dialogue between government, regional leaders, trade unions, and social groups. A new study has revealed that an average of 400 women per year are criminalized for having abortions in Colombia, one quarter of whom are minors. 51% of the complaints against women are made by medical personnel who treated women seeking medical help, a violation of professional secrecy. Around 400,000 women have abortions every year in Colombia, and only between 1 and 9% are legal. Seeking unsafe and illegal procedures is a major cause of death for women in Colombia, where the conditions for legal abortion are extremely restrictive. Also this week, the Government Institute for Family Wellbeing, the ICBF, reported that 46 cases of violence against minors are reported daily in Colombia. 72% of cases of sexual violence occur in the home. A brewing scandal in the Ministry of Technology has broken, and ICT Minister Karen Abudinen has been called for official questioning about a missing 70 billion pesos advance from a huge contract to bring internet access to rural schools. A company was awarded the contract in December 2020, despite warnings and falsified documents used to receive the advance. The Attorney General is in the USA this week and has met with the FBI to request support in the investigation to trace the money, which was consigned to the United States. Joint investigations into money laundering are underway and extraditions are possible. Meanwhile, President Iván Duque is in South Korea for a trip focused on trade, vaccines, science and technology. One of the aims of the visit was to sell Colombia as a destination for vaccine production, and a memorandum of understanding was signed with the company SK Bioscience to start researching and manufacturing vaccines in Colombia. SK Bioscience manufactures AstraZeneca's coronavirus vaccine. COVID-19 cases continue to fall in Colombia. New daily cases are now at less than 2,000, down from a peak of more than 30,000 in July. More than 45% of the population has now had one dose of the vaccine. Nearly 30% are fully vaccinated, though shortages of a second dose have been reported across the country. Those were your top stories for the week. Thanks for listening.
And we're back. This is segment 3 of episode 391. You know who's on the show. I've been telling you all about this for a week. We have the directors and producers of a new documentary that's coming out. It gets its Colombian release on the 2nd of September and its sort of, let's say, international release on PBS from October the 18th. So for you out there in the United States, we have Oscar Molina and Brenda Steinecke, who are up in Santa Elena near to Medellin, but we're going to talk about their documentary called La Casa de Mama Icha, which is set in Mompós. That makes me so happy. That's why I had. But welcome on the Colombia Calling podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much for this invitation. We are really happy to be here. And I mean, this is a kind of weird new way to join the audience, but we are also very happy for all those peoples around the world who are maybe listening now. Hello.
Yeah, we get like one listener in Malawi. So there you go. But we have thousands in the US, Canada, the UK, and Colombia, and Australia too. So the Anglophone market. But you know, we all love documentaries. We're all watching documentaries. That's the truth. And I think, of course, in this quarantine and lockdown, our tastes have evolved, and perhaps we are experimenting or trying to understand different ways of life and so on. And I think La Casa de Mama Icha fills that genre for us. But who wants to tell us a little bit about, I want my audience to understand what this documentary is about, because I've seen trailers and I can make up ideas. But I'm waiting till the 2nd of September to go out and see it here in the Avenida Chile, because it will be on there, I know. But so tell us about this, La Casa de Mama Icha. Tell us about Mama Icha.
We are very excited to share this story with you. And this is happens that the main character of this film is Colombian. But we feel and we are sure that this story has to be with many of us, because it's placed in a kind of international contest. La Casa de Mama Icha is a story about Mama Icha is a heroine, a character that after living in the U.S. for 33 years, she decides to return to Colombia to live finally her last days in her hometown. She is 93 years old, and her dream, her last wish, is to be her last days in her land. And also, which is also very important, she wants to live specifically in the house that she built during the years that she was absent. She wants to live in the house that she built in Mompós with the resources she was able to get during her migration. So after 33 years, she's able to return to Colombia to accomplish this dream. This is kind of the main journey of the story, and the story has to be with the consequences that she faces upon her return in the relationship with her children, her family, the economics.
I like this because it's a different tale, not the tale like, I want to say, Paraíso Travel, that movie where the Colombian migrants going north and all of the inhumane experiences that they had. But we look at The Casa de Mama Icha, so it's a documentary, it's a true story, but Mama Icha, Mompocina, from my town, all my listeners will know, my adopted homeland, so, and I know where the house is, I know where it is on the Calle del Medio, and I remember the Se Vende sign, the for sale sign, which pops up in your publicity, but I want to know, Mama Icha did not leave Colombia because of the violence. She did not leave because of, let's say, displacement or political uncertainty, did she? I mean, she's not one of the millions, let's say, that have left Colombia in that circumstance. She left Colombia under quite different circumstances.
Yes, yes. The case of Mama Icha is quite specific, but she's not the only one in the world. She migrated when she was 60 years old because her daughter, Doña Epifania, who lives in Philadelphia, and we are great friends, and she already saw the film, and well, we are very grateful for everything. Anyhow, Epifania had left to the U.S. Years before, and she asked Mama Icha to come to the U.S. in order to take care of the children, because Epifania, as many people, and specifically migrants, she worked a lot, really, really a lot. So she needed someone to take care of the children because she had sparely time for that. So she migrated when she was 60, but she had this idea that she will come back to Colombia soon. And she firstly thought maybe 3 years, maybe five, maybe seven, maybe 10, maybe 15. And this is something happening to many of us who have a migration experience, that we many times we leave thinking that we are having a new experience, or we are finding a way of developing also professionally, or to gain some money and then come back. And then time passes and our situation changes and the world changes. And in the specific case of Mama Icha, which is a story that is shared by many, many people around the world, and is this topic of the dream of a proper house, a building to protect your family, to protect yourself. And this is like the dream she has going to the US. Well, this dream becomes the reason why she could not come before to Colombia. But we are going to talk probably more about it. Yeah. And anyhow, and just a note on the bottom of the page, it is said that it's unusual for people to migrate when they are already over 50 or 60, but there is a big amount of people migrating because they are taking care of their grandchildren in the places where their daughters and sons or where they are needed. So this exists, but it's not very visible for the statistics.
It's an interesting concept, isn't it? As you say, and I love this whole idea of, okay, maybe in 3 years, maybe in 5 years, maybe in 10 years. It took 33 years. And what you are alluding to there is that she ended up becoming trapped by, I mean, the economics of it. I guess she was getting a welfare or a pension or something. And from there, the money was going back to Mompós, the remesa, to build the house, to do these things. But before we get into the economics and this, and it is really fascinating, just without telling us the whole story, because, you know, people need to get out there to the movies. We've got to fill the cinemas again. Is it a happy return? I mean, was she unhappy in Philadelphia? Is it a happy return to Mompós? I mean, because I have an extended family in Mompós, and you know, many elderly relatives. There's a great grandmother to my children who's in her 90s as well.
Wow.
And they think nothing about, okay, yeah, we get in the car for 5 hours and we do this and we do that. You filmed Mama Icha before the bridges were built and before the pandemic, so it was a different time altogether. I mean, tell us, was it, again, I want to say, is it a positive story or is it just sort of a tragedy? I don't know. You have to tell us.
I think you have to see the film, and I don't want you to get ideas about the film without watching the film.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mama Icha, I think as many migrants has had this kind of splitted feeling of not feeling home, completely there. when she was living in the United States. And upon her return to Colombia, she was happy to accomplish her dream of being here. I mean, in Mompox, but here in Colombia. But at the same time, when she was in Mompox, she missed a lot. She was missing her family in Philadelphia. So I think that happens with the story of many migrants that go far away in order to look for prosperity, searching prosperity. And after, and they dream about the place where there was, the place
Where they come from,
where they feel belongingness to. So, and upon her return, she started having nostalgia for what happened with her relatives in Philadelphia. So, it's, I think migrants can share this feeling, this feeling of home.
Just a side note is, how many chickens do you have there?
I was about to make a comment about it. We live like with 25 chickens and seven roosters, and they walk all around the house. So if you hear a certain noise just here, please, they have noticed that it's they are just chickens, but a lot of them.
There are a lot of them. I can hear it. So, but, and they're particularly active at this moment, but it's fine. I like the ambience provided by it. But this feeling of nostalgia, and you've got it, it's sort of the normal nostalgia of from where, you know, where you come from. My nostalgia, for example, for London, and it grew immensely during the lockdown, even though I haven't lived there in such a long time. But of course, I'm remembering what was when I lived there, which is now more than 18 years ago or 19 years ago when I lived there full time, not what is now. And then you've got that nostalgia when she's back in Mompox and maybe a more comfortable life in Philadelphia. So I suppose in the documentary you explore this double nostalgia.
Yeah, but I think more in the case of Mama Icha, this is very interesting because more than a nostalgia or a double nostalgia, she's split it. But since she's 93 years old and she knows she does not have so much time left, she makes a decision and she wants to be in Mompox. She wants to be surrounded by her old neighborhood, neighbors and her family and her patio and the people coming along and going and coming. And this is a decision she made. And she's very clear about it. And she knows that the return won't be easy. But this is something existential for her. And this is something I really kind of learned from Mama Icha because, I mean, I also have a long migration story. I lived for many years in Germany and my father, he's German, living in Colombia. He's also a migrant. And this very question about where do I want to spend my last days? I mean, this question about what is really important at the end of my days and with which temperature do I want to feel in my body and what do I want to eat? I mean, it's also a very sensitive issue. And Mama Icha is very straight and she does not reflect on it or whatever, but she just do it. And this is really very impressive because she's 93 years old. And as you said, I mean, coming from Philadelphia to Mompox is not an easy issue. Like she has to take the fly and then come to Barranquilla and then go by car and then take the boat and then take the car again. So, I mean, this is like a... So I think in the case of Mama Icha, just to round up this, it's not a question of nostalgia. It's a question about a divided sense of home, of course, but she made a decision and she went there where she wanted to be for the last days, knowing that it won't be easy. Yeah. And this is important because she was clear and she was conscious.
But see, in some of the clips I've seen, she's there in her rocking chair, so very Montpossino.
Yes.
Again, let me just say to the listeners, you don't need to take a ferry anymore. We have bridges on both sides of the island. It's slightly less complex. And supposedly, well, they were meant to start this year and last year, flights are arriving. So there you go. So don't be put off by that. But that said, I think that whole thing of the coming and going as well, it's the image of the town. It's a pueblo. So the guy selling fruits at the door, or someone just passes by, and you always share a word. You always are in, and I just think it's something that's very, I don't know. It has that spirit that maybe, I don't know, maybe it's lost in a big city in the Northern Hemisphere. I doubt. Well, I would think that perhaps Mama Icha and her family live in a barrio where there are other immigrants and so on, so maybe they feel comfortable. But on my question on immigration, and I this is something I explore personally a fair bit, is that I find immigrants, I don't know if myself so much, but immigrants, if they come over, or let's say, I don't know, Germans, Dutch, English, Americans come over to Colombia, they end up behaving more German, Dutch, English, so on. And likewise, did Mama Icha become even more Colombian, remembering Colombia when she was in Philadelphia?
Yeah, that's something that is very noticeable with migrants, that when you are in a different place, you start having a strong feelings about your root, your roots, and the traditions, and you start kind of giving value to them. Because maybe before, when you are in your home country, you are not noticing those traditions, and you don't give more value to them. And it happens when you are far away; those traditions becomes something that makes your spirit to be happy and to feel like you belong to someone else.
Mm. And can we, Oscar, Brenda, how did you find Mama Icha? I mean, Oscar, I know you lived in Philadelphia, but how do you, you had to have been thinking of this kind of story. You had to have been thinking of something else. And so how do you find a personality larger than life as Mama Icha? Because when you see her, you're like, wow, she's indomitable.
I mean, the story is kind of long. I have been thinking for more than 20 years in the issue of that many people from less developed countries, they migrate to more countries with more development, or they have more concentration of money or resources. And one of the dreams of migration is to go far away in order to be able to get the resources to have a house in the place where you no longer live. So for different experiences of traveling, I tried many different times of moving away from Colombia. And during those experiences, I had the opportunity to meet many migrants and to talk with them. I was living with them. My basic daily routine was with migrants from Asia, Eastern Europe, Latin America. So I start talking with them about why they decided to migrate. And I start listening that there was like a common dream, the dream of having a house. And I felt, this is strange. People have to move so far away in order to have a house in the place where they are no longer living there. So for me, it was kind of, this is weird. And it's more weird when this situation happens to many people. And so I got very interested in this topic. And I went to research and talk with more migrants. And I realized that many of them already were able to get the house, the dream house, in their original places. Mm-hmm. And they were able to make possible this dream after many years of working, sending money, dreaming about the house, how I want the house, how I want the design, what materials do I want for the house. And after this long effort, transnational effort, they don't move back to their land. They don't inhabit. They don't dwell in those houses. Mm. So I felt like, oh my God, this is meaningful in order to explore how the economic system, how the political system has an impact in the experience of home for many migrants. And that was the starting point of this project. And so I had that idea. I want to make a film about this, but how can I make it? Yeah. So when I was already old, I went to live in Philadelphia in the United States. I went to study a master's degree in film. And so one of my plans was, like, I want to go to one of those countries in order to become more familiar with the language and in order to be able to research about this, more about these stories. And being there, I did like 2 years of research, talking with migrants, talking with academics, doing a lot of readings. So in a moment, I understood that in order to be able to tell this story, I needed to find someone that didn't want to postpone the return to live finally in that house. So I went to look for that person, and I was lucky because I had a conversation with Mama Icha's granddaughter, who is Michelangelo Ortiz. She's a great, great artist. We had met before. And so I told her, okay, I'm doing this research and I am looking for a migrant who wants to return to her home or his homeland, and someone that had built a house with remittances. And she said, oh, my grandmother, she's crazy about her dream of returning. And we cannot stand her anymore because she wants just that. So I asked her, I want to meet her. So she opened the doors of her house. And through that moment, I was able to meet Mama Icha and to start talking with her and to spend many hours talking about her dream of returning home, which at the same time, I was planning my own return to Colombia. So it's like this kind of coincidence. So that was how I met Mama Icha.
I mean, and you know, without the Colombian community, it could have been someone else, you know, maybe in Vietnam or elsewhere. It could have been almost anywhere. But of course, the Colombian circle, you know, more contacts. I like this idea of your return as well, because it's parallel, your return with Mama Icha's. Now, if I'm not mistaken, and I've seen a photo, you accompanied Mama Icha back to Colombia on her return. Had she visited Colombia in 33 years or no?
Yeah, she was able to come to Colombia 4 times.
Okay.
She tried to move back during those 4 times. And every time that she returned, she had economic problems. No one was really taking care well of her. So the regular story that I knew, because Mama Icha told me and also her relatives in Philadelphia, was like every time that Mama Icha tried to return, she was able just to stay in Colombia a couple of months, 2 months, and after she had to go back.
Then when you came down with her, how was that?
It was emotionally demanding and physically because I had returned like 6 months previously to Colombia. I mean, before to Mama Icha, I was in contact with her and her family in Philadelphia. And once Michelangelo called me and told me that they already made the decision to allow Mama Icha to return, and she asked me if I come back to Philadelphia to pick up Mama Icha and to accompany her in her return to Colombia. I mean, I did. It was not easy because at that moment I didn't have a US visa, whatever. So I managed how to resolve my trip back to Philadelphia, and I went to their place, and I did the final trip of returning to Colombia with Mama Icha. At that time, I had my luggage, part of my luggage, in Mama Icha's place in Philadelphia. So it was Mama Icha and myself with Mama Icha's luggage, my own luggage. I was taking care of Mama Icha and at the same time shooting the film. So
you were quite the chaperone then in that one, and trying to film with all this luggage. It's fascinating, and I think it's a different attitude as well that Mama Icha must have had. You know, this is it. This is the time I go back, I will pass away. I will die in my hometown. I mean, she must have had a whole different mentality on that trip.
Yes. I mean, it was emotionally very intense because for her was she was moving away from the people that she was living for 33 years. From her daughters, from her granddaughters. And she knew that she was not going to be able to see them again. And for the family in Philadelphia was the situation, I mean, broke my heart, because also they were saying the last goodbye to someone that was alive, and they wanted to keep there. They wanted to protect her there. So it was difficult for them also to accept Mama Icha's decision to return to Colombia and to know that it was going to be the last time to see her.
And Brenda, what were you doing then when he was coming with all the bags and the film and Mama Icha? Were you waiting in Bogota or in Barranquilla? Or?
She was coming back from Germany.
I was coming back from Germany.
Okay.
So, no, this is, this project, it's more than 8 years now, and Oscar started shooting on 2013. Yes,
wow.
And I returned to Colombia in 2013, and I start working together with Oscar in 2016. So I am in for 5 years now, and Oscar has been in for all the time, and he will be in for all the time.
Yeah, this is a long project. I mean, to follow someone's life. I mean, even the last years, it's a long
absolutely.
Project. But she still had, Mama Icha still had significant family in Mompox. It wasn't as if she was going back to zero. And of course, we can see that in the trailer as well. There's a fair amount of conflict there, you know. There's a fair amount of conflict. So, we'll leave it to everyone to go out and see it and watch it on PBS. But when we were talking before, and this is off camera and everything else, when we were getting to know one another, we were talking about the sense of belonging. And I think that's something that's so very important, and that, you know, where you feel comfortable, where you want to spend your last years, where you want to die. And Oscar, you asked me, you know, as you said, and you sort of turned the tables and you said, you know, have you got it organized? How do you want to be buried? Where do you want to be buried? And I've never really thought about it. And my answer was, of course, well, I want to be cremated, because I don't want to take up space anywhere. You can toss me in the river somewhere. I don't really mind. And then I thought about it a bit more, and I thought, well, I could get a tiny little space in the British Cemetery in Bogota, because that would be, you know, a way of being connected to home. And I do feel I've done a lot of research down there in that area, in Los Martires, and I take people into the cemetery and so on. So I thought, I do feel quite close to it, but then maybe you cremate me and put my ashes in the Magdalena River, and then it flows out into the sea and the currents take it to the United Kingdom. I don't know. So I don't know. I mean, maybe you help me with this, but I think it's a very, as you say, existential question. And you guys are going you're exploring that. And when you've been nominated for so many prizes, and you've won prizes too?
Yeah, also. I mean, before the film was done, and also now, yeah, we have had a good
reception.
Yes.
Okay, so but does this conversation come up when you're talking about it and when you're giving your presentations of this belonging?
I mean, yes, because the film is about that topic, but also because we like to talk about belongingness, because I think that's something that we have lost the connection with this feeling because of mobility, globalization, whatever, and I feel that for us is very important to come back and to ask, okay, where do you feel belongingness to, and what does it mean for you?
And it's not only about nationality. I mean, it's not about the national thinking of being from wherever, but it's something more material. I mean, it's really about the relationship to the soil or the relationship to your relevant relations, you know, and I mean, for Mama Icha, the place of belongingness was Mompos, but maybe your place of belongingness is somewhere else. And it does not, it relates to the origin, but it's not only about the origin. It's about asking ourselves, or remembering that our constant building of identity has to be with the territory and is related to our experience of home. And this is really hard if you think of people who have been displaced violently or people experiencing rape in their homes. So, I mean, this is a really hardcore issue because it's not only about this idealized sense of belongingness and the plants and the patio. And this is very nice, but it's really an important question about rootedness. And something that is very important for us is to question again and again, even if there is not answer for it. Why on earth we live in Colombia? This is a rich country. There are so many cultural expressions. There are so many resources. Why people have to leave? Why do they have to leave from the countryside to the city? Why do they have to leave, or why do we have to leave? To the USA, to Germany, to somewhere else. And I mean, this is because we have naturalized the inequality in the world. It's like, oh yes, the world is unequal. This is really terrible, but what could we do? And I don't have an answer how to change it now, but I do have the need to question the existence of such a huge inequality that makes people, takes away from the people the right to stay at home. There are millions of people that cannot stay at home, even if they want. And so we like to talk about the right to migrate as well as the right not to migrate, the right to stay in the places of origin.
That's all right. That's a fascinating concept. No, but I like it. There was passion there, and one of your jealous roosters didn't get involved. but you weren't interrupted by the farmyard. But I think that the right not to leave home, and if I'm not mistaken, is it the Colombian diaspora is around 10 million people outside of Colombia?
It's around the 10% of Colombian population. It's around 5 million people. Mm. The statistics, the official statistics from the national government are from 2012. It means that it could be more. But we want to emphasize that Colombia has at least 10% of its population abroad, yes, in other countries. But Colombia has the shameful place to be the first place, the first country in the world with more internal people displaced in the country. Mm-hmm. So, which is around 7.5 to 9 million people displaced in the same country. So I want to go back to Brenda's question, which is why a country that is so rich in natural resources, in talented people, has the tendency to displace its people. So I think that's kind of the original question that motivates this project. And it happens also in many countries. I mean, it's not a situation that is just exclusive of Colombia. It happens in many countries. As it is our country and we felt so close to this situation, we formulate this question from the Colombian perspective. Mm-hmm. But I think many people from many nations can have the same question. Why territories that are so rich that they have the resources to provide a good living for their people, for political and economical reasons, they displace their people to other countries?
And just coming back to the Colombian diaspora, thank you, Richard, for that reminding, that remembering that. And this is something which we especially are kind of touched by, because there are many other countries which are very conscious about their diaspora. And they are engaged and they have a clear relationship with that diaspora, and the people know how to make contacts in their own countries and so on. And the Colombian diaspora is very well organized among themselves. Like, there are many groups and associations and cultural initiatives and so on. But the Colombian government has no idea about it. And what Oscar was saying, the last statistics about the diaspora are from 2012. You know, it's like this 10% of the population does not matter, but those 10% of the population sent back home as much remittances, as much divisas, how do you say, like international
money wires.
Thank you very much. I mean, more than all the coffee exports and fruit exports and aguacate exports together. And these remittances represent the second highest divisa, I mean, money divisa.
Coming from abroad, yes.
Yes, yeah. I mean, the second biggest one in Colombia. So it represents a huge
contribution to the economy.
Yes.
Mm. And to the development of families, because which is important also about the money that migrants send back home. That money goes directly to their families. Mm. And that money helps their families to have clothing, to have roof, to have food, to have education. So that's they help from far away and from being displaced, the development of their own families. Mm. For example, the first divisa, that's the right word in English, the first divisa that comes to Colombia is from selling oil and energetic resources. Mm-hmm. And yes, but how many people from the government live from those resources? How many bureaucracy have the government to sustain, to support with that money? And it's the opposite situation with remittances, which is money coming directly to be invested in the basic needs of families.
It's a strange one, isn't it? Because the Colombian economy requires these remittances. Yeah, that requires this to come into the economy, yet the Colombian government, not one of the governments, you know, in all of the history, really, have paid attention to this diaspora, the Colombian community overseas. And yet, if you could get all adult Colombians in the diaspora to actually vote as well in elections, we've got 2022 coming up. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. And so you'd think, and I know that in other countries, they do make sort of, they do appeal to their overseas nationals to say, you know, vote, do this. You know, the US definitely, you know, cast your vote at the embassy or whatever. And I think the French are very good at it as well.
The Germans.
Well, yeah, of course. always good at these things. But the Colombian one, I was looking at lines outside the embassy or the consulate in London, and the consulate didn't know how to register people to vote. And so everyone's shouting that it's corrupt and it's this and it's that. And I just think it's disorganized. I just think that there's not a roadmap of how to do this, and everybody, they want to vote. I talked as well to some Colombians in South Carolina, and they have to drive all the way to Atlanta, and it's a 4-hour drive. Wow. And they're going in a caravan of Colombians because the consulate in Atlanta is not answering their phone calls.
Wow.
So they're going there to, you know, like to doorstep the consulate, and they told me we're not leaving until we're registered to vote. Wow. So there's clearly nothing in place.
Yeah.
And you say it's a huge amount of people that could, you know, had all of them voted and in the last elections, it could have been a very different result. That's the truth. I mean, it wasn't the end of it. So at the end of this, I mean, at the end of Mama Icha, not the end of the film, it's now, you know, you're still enjoying, as you say, you're flourishing in this. It's coming out on the 2nd of September and on PBS October the 18th. Is it too early to ask you what's the next project? Will you be doing another study in migration?
No, it's not too early. It's just the perfect question.
Okay, there we go.
It's happening.
It's happening. No, it's just because Mama Icha is part of a documentary transmedia trilogy. So Mama Icha La Casa and Mama Icha is the first feature length film. Mm-hmm. And the second one is called Absentee's House. Mm-hmm. And it's now in post production. And it runs, it's also about thinking or feeling, especially feeling this divided sense of home, but it's placed between a small town, an incredible, beautiful environment in Mexico, in Mexitlan, and also in relationship to the USA. And so this one is in post-production, and we are working on finding funds funding in order to go forward. Mm-hmm. And and also Oscar has other personal projects which we hope we can release in the next years.
Oh, fantastic! What's the third part of the trilogy? You can't tell me.
No, no, of course. The third part of the trilogy is meant to be a web platform, a kind of web tool. It's a digital a platform, because both of the films are based in a very deep and long-term lasting investigation, but their audiovisual language is very emotional. And the films are not about explaining. The films are about empathy. It's about feeling or coming closer to the feeling of this divided sense of home, this dream of returning, of rootedness, the sense of absence in a place where many, many people have migrated. So it's about feeling and about empathy. And the web platform, it's about allocating and giving a context to this investigation and making a point of how the house is a place where intimacy and globalization crosses. You know, it's the place where we live our most intimate life. We have our relevant relationships. We seek for protection and security. Thank you to Paolo Boccangli for that definition of house, of home. But also it's the place where transnational movement materializes. It's the place where maybe I cannot be because of the mobility policies worldwide. And I mean, the house is built out of bricks and I have to have money to buy those bricks. It's very, very basic. So the third part of the trilogy is about finding... We are searching for an interactive language in order to contextualize this reflection and all these crossing roads through this idea, this notion of house and home.
But also, which is we want to communicate. People to know that this situation mm-hmm. that happens with migrants and their houses that they build with a lot of effort happens everywhere. So sometimes it's like it's not just a single story. It happens not just in one particular country. It happens in the relationship between places, territories, countries that have lost economic prosperity. In the relationship with countries that are accumulated more financial capital. So that's just to make an evidence that there is something that is weird in the way how we are with money, politics, that it's creating this kind of situation of houses built with a lot of love, effort, that their owners are not able to dwell in them.
And to enjoy them.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's a lot to debate, but we'll let the documentaries do the talking. And everybody, you are obliged to go out if you're here in Colombia from the 2nd of September and go out and see the film La Casa de Mama Icha. And if you're in the US, PBS, just put it, you know, look up the PBS website and put in Mama Icha and it comes up because I've sent the link to family, okay? And so that comes out on the 18th of October. If you want to check out the website, it's www.micasamyhomefilm.com. Of course, I'll put that onto Twitter and I'll put that onto Facebook and no one has any excuse not to look at it because we will be promoting it in the next week. It sounds absolutely fascinating. It sounds like something that will make me reflect even more on my status of an immigrant here in Colombia and the whole idea of belonging and my, you know, my the intimacy and globalization where it meets in the home. I mean, it's just quite, but the divided sense of home, that really appeals to me, that phrase, that term, the divided sense of home, I think is one of those key points that you've made. So let me take this moment, Oscar and Brenda, thank you so much for your time, and I wish you all the best with the release of this documentary.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you so much. And one of the beautiful things of doing what we do is that it makes possible that we meet. And it's been really, really a great opportunity that we encounter each other, that we could share our stories. Thank you very much to you also.
Yes, thank you so much, Richard. It's great that we have this conversation to share all the work that we have been doing. And you support us to communicate to other people. And also for us, more than telling to people that we make a film, is about, we want to bring questions about how we relate with, I don't know, with the economy, with the political situation.
With our families.
With our families. So that's our main point when we do this work. Thank you so much.
Thank you to you, the chickens, the roosters, and of course to Mama Icha, because we have to go out and watch the documentary. Thank you all so much again. This has been episode 391 of the Columbia Calling podcast. We'll be back next week with more interviews and interviewees. But for the time being, you are obliged. Again, 2nd of September in Columbia, 18th of October overseas. I've been Richard McCall talking to Oscar Molina and Brenda Steinecke, who are up there in Santa Elena, not far from Medellin. Thank you again for listening and goodbye.